The Rising Coaches podcast is brought to you by Connor Sports. If you need a basketball court, trust me, these are the people you're going to want to call. Connor Sports is the market leader in sports surfacing. They're the official court for the NCAA Final Four. They're the official court for the FIBA World Cup. They have courts all over the NBA. They have courts all over college basketball. Whether you need a brand new maple hardwood court for a state-of-the-art arena, or you're just looking for a recycled rubber court for your local community center, they are the people you're going to want to call. Trust me, there's nobody better. Connor Sports, where champions play. Thank you for listening to the Rising Coaches podcast. This is Adam Gordon. We really appreciate you tuning in on our first ever podcast for Rising Coaches. Our guest today first came to the Rising Coaches Conference 7 years ago. At the time, he was a student manager at Vanderbilt men's basketball. He is now an assistant coach at Monmouth University. Sam Ferry sits down with us and talks to us about his rise through the profession, as well as what they did and what it took to build up Monmouth to the mid-major power it is today. We hope you enjoy. We have some very exciting things coming for you guys this year. More episodes of the podcast, as well as our Final Four party in Phoenix, Arizona this spring. We thank you guys for listening and hope you enjoy. All right, joining us today is Sam Ferry, assistant coach for Monmouth University Hawks. Sam is in the midst of a historic season for Monmouth, coming off a great season last year, an NIT berth. Was it for the first time in school history, Sam?
First time.
Awesome.
First time.
Monmouth clinched the regular season title last night with a win, so that's two in a row, conference championships in the MAC. Sam, thanks for joining us, buddy.
Thank you, Adam, for having me. I'm honored to be on here. As an attendee of Rising Coaches Elite, I got a lot out of it, and to be a part of the first podcast, I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing to be your guinea pig, but I'm excited to be on.
Well, we appreciate it. All right, Sam, let's jump right in. Take me back to March 7th, 2016. You guys had an unbelievable season, 20-plus wins, regular season conference champions. You guys are in the conference tournament championship game against Iona. Tell me about that game. Tell me about the emotions that followed.
Well, the first thing I remember, I think it was a 9 p.m. tip, which for me, I go to bed around 9:30, so that's really hard for me. But it was our first time the program's been in the MAC championship game. It was obviously our first time being here, year five. But it was a season of firsts. I mean, we had beaten five BCS teams previous to that year. We had never beaten a BCS team in the history of the program. So we were used to doing things for the first time. But I just remember shoot around being different that day, just because there was a lot of anticipation and really not knowing what to expect going against an Iona team that we had beaten at their place. And then they came into our building about 3 weeks before that conference championship game and really put it on us. And game ended up coming down to the wire. It was back and forth and ended up losing there in the last minute in a really, really good college basketball game. So that was tough. Definitely a tough day for mostly, you know, especially for our kids, but certainly for our program.
You guys had a lot of build up to that game. You mentioned you guys had five high major wins during your non-conference mm-hmm. season. There was even talk of, like, is Monmouth going to get an at-large bid? What was it like after that game in the locker room? Was that a hope of your guys? Did you guys have a pretty good feel you would be going to the NIT?
You know what? We didn't talk about it a ton. I mean, obviously it was on everybody's mind just because it was so covered by the media. And I think Jay Billis, during that broadcast, might have said 30 times that we deserved to be in if we lost that game. It was an interesting dynamic because we had one senior last year. So it didn't I mean, it was crushing losing that game, don't get me wrong, but it didn't come with the devastation that you would expect from a loss where you have a whole bunch of seniors who are doing it for the last time. So I think there was optimism that we were going to be in the NCAA tournament, but there was no, I mean, we were 100% locked in on winning that game, and that was really tough for us.
So unfortunately, you guys didn't get the invite to the tournament, but you guys did make the NIT for the first time in school history, which is a huge deal. I know some programs, it feels for the kids like a letdown, and it's almost a challenge to get them up for those games. Did you guys experience that at all, or were you guys excited to be on that stage?
You know what? Our guys, I think about when we were watching the selection show, and I'm sure you remember about halfway through that show, the bracket got leaked. And 5 minutes after that, you realized that the leak bracket was accurate and that we weren't in. And I think everybody was crushed because we were ready to see our name be really, really excited and go play in the NCAA tournament. And I remember that night, Justin Robinson, who was player of the year last year, junior, was our best player, tweeted just how excited he was to play in the NIT. And frankly, I think that set the tone for the players and the coaches. You know, when your best player and your leader, you know, kind of puts it out there like that genuinely, it gets everybody ready, and certainly we're going to be professional about it, but when your junior star, you know, sets the bar like that, I think you have to rise to the occasion as his teammate and as his coaches.
That's pretty special. So you guys go into the NIT, beat Bucknell in the first round, end up losing to George, a very good George Washington team. Now you're coming into this season. Like you said, you return almost everybody. You lose Deion Jones, who was a very good player for you guys at 10 points a game. Yep. But other than him, literally everybody is back. You add some pieces. What does this season feel like going into it? Do you have something to prove? Is there a chip on everybody's shoulder?
Yeah, the feel is totally different. I mean, last year, you know, as we were beating those high major teams, I'm sure you can remember our bench got a lot of publicity, and basically we were seen accurately as a group that really, really had a lot of fun. And like I said before, everything we were doing was for the first time, and we handled it well, and we just kind of went along for the ride. And this year, we certainly are a group that has fun doing what we do, but there's an underlying seriousness about our season just because we understand what needs to be done, and we understand we need to win on Monday night. I think last night is a perfect example. We clinched the number one seed and the regular season championship. Last year when we did that, Coach Rice took the mic and thank the crowd just for supporting our kids and supporting our program these last few years, some of which have been tough. And it was a pretty special moment. Whereas last night, I think they put a graphic up on the Jumbotron for about 15 seconds, and we just kept it moving. So I think there's an understanding of what our main task is. Winning a regular season championship was definitely a goal for this team, and doing it back-to-back does not happen a whole lot in college basketball, but this group has their eyes set on going to the NCAA tournament.
Sam, I want to go backwards a little bit to where you guys first got started with Coach Rice. Where you first met King Rice? Where your head coach at Monmouth now? Where did you guys first meet?
I met Coach Rice. I was 17 years old, and I was stepping on foot at Vanderbilt University in Nashville, Tennessee. My freshman year was his first year as an assistant coach. So he has seen me grow up. I was a student manager for all 4 years there. When I graduated, Coach Stallings hired me as a video coordinator, so I got to work on staff with him for a year. And really has just mentored me, totally put his arm around me. Has been an unbelievable friend, an unbelievable mentor, a terrific boss, and all five of those years with him in Nashville, and now I'm in year six with him at Monmouth. So it's been a special ride for both of us.
Who else was on? Who are the other assistant coaches on that staff at Vanderbilt when you got there?
Dan, first year, Dan Muller.
Dan, Coach Muller is the head coach at Illinois State. He's also having a historic season up there, which is where he played. Tom Richardson, Coach Rich, he was the workout guru. And as a manager, all I was trying to do was just be in the gym, so I was just his permanent rebounder. So I'm a quarter as good a shooting coach as he is, but everything I've learned about shooting is just from being in the gym, you know, being a rebounder during his workouts. He's now the first assistant over at Pittsburgh with Coach Stallings.
He's Coach Stallings, and then, the kind of guy. He's been with him for years. Is that right?
He's been with him dating back to when they were together at Illinois State.
Okay.
Just a veteran, unbelievable human being.
What a big-time staff. Did you get a feel right away that Coach Muller was going to be a big-time head coach, Coach Rice was going to be a big-time head coach, Coach Rich, just a wealth of knowledge? What was the feel? Did you know how special that group was when you were there?
You know, well first of all, I'm not going to leave out my man Coach Fred, who's now the director of operations at North Carolina, who is an unbelievable coach, and obviously gets to do it at the highest level at North Carolina. But you know what? I don't know. I don't know that I had that perspective being there. I mean, it was my first time being a part of a college basketball program, which was, I mean, my passion has always been basketball. And then to get to do that at the high major Division I level, I mean, I was obsessed, for lack of a better word, from day one. But I think what I did know was that each of those guys are just really, really good people. And I really valued my relationships with them when I was there, and our relationships have grown in an amazing way now that I'm in the business and I'm much older now. But I think for everyone looking back, you look back at that group of assistants and you realize that was a star-studded group, which might explain some of the success that we had while we were there.
I spent a little time in the SEC at Mississippi State for a few years, and I always thought that Kevin Stallings was one of the best coaches in that league, top two, top three, in terms of just doing more with less talent, you know. Obviously good coaches, good programs in that conference, but Kevin Stallings' ability to get the talent that he had to play at the level that they did, I always thought was remarkable. What was it like to work for Coach Stallings? What made him so good?
Well, I heard him say one time, one of his good friends is Vince Gill, who's a country music star. They got to know each other in Nashville. And I guess Vince had told him that just music and songs, lyrics, and the music just come naturally to him. And Coach Stallings has compared that to kind of how his mind thinks about offense. I mean, what he does, if you want to learn some offensive concepts, just turn on a Pittsburgh basketball game, which is where he's at now. But I mean, he is one of the best offensive minds in college basketball, if not the game. But it's been a great experience for me because I was with Coach Stallings for 5 years, where the overwhelming focus was offense, and then I go with Coach Rice, and for 6 years the overwhelming focus is defense. So when I got here, I thought I was an offensive coach, and now I know I'm a defensive coach. So it's been some nice exposure for me as an assistant.
Do you sometimes sit there in your Monmouth practices just foaming at the mouth, ready to get to offense? And
it's the opposite. I only see defense now. I'll be watching a recruit, and I'm seeing how the pick and roll coverage on the other team isn't very good. So I always watch defense now. I think I've got some good offensive concepts and understanding for me to just be a well-rounded coach, but I am 100% a defensive coach.
You're completely converted.
I'm converted.
Now, what was it like being in Nashville? You know, you have Tennessee State, who was really good at that time under John Cooper, Belmont, obviously, Lipscomb, all right there within a few miles of each other. What was that experience like? Yeah. Did you guys cross paths or share info?
Yeah. You know what? I mean, one of the things that I think really stinks about being a coaching, not that there's a whole bunch of them, but, you know, you don't really get a whole bunch of opportunities, as you know, to go see other people practice. Now, being in Nashville,
I got more opportunities than most. I got to go over to Belmont, see Coach Bird practice. You know, you walk into Coach Bird's practices and you just see, you look up and you just see conference championship after conference championship all the way across. You know, Tennessee State was special for me. Coach Cooper was there. He's now at Miami of Ohio, but was good friends with our staff at Vandy and Coach Rice, and just getting to go over there. I mean, he welcomed me into his practices. We were playing them one year, and they needed to use our gym. So as a manager, I let them in for like a 6 a.m. practice, and I asked Coach Cooper if I could just stay and take notes, which is, you know, normally people wouldn't let you stay just because we were going to play them in 2 months. But not only did he let me stay, he, like, brought me into their huddle when practice was over, and I got to form, you know, become great friends with Trey Meyer, who was on that staff, who's now with Coach Cooper at Miami of Ohio. So
that's funny. Most coaches at shoot-arounds are kicking out janitors, and there's people running around the track, and they're kicking them out and covering up cameras that are clearly off because they're so paranoid. That's pretty special that he let you be involved.
Yes, it was.
Okay, so you're at Vanderbilt 4 years as a manager. You get the video coordinator job shortly after you graduate. Is that right?
Yep, right. Actually, before I graduated.
Okay, so five seasons with Vanderbilt, and then King Rice gets the job at Monmouth. Is that pretty accurate? Mm-hmm. When did he get hired? Is it Final Four or late summer?
He got hired. I mean, it must have been right around the Final Four. I remember my junior year, we had a game day, and we were up in the office, and it was me, Coach Rice, and a friend and strength and conditioning coach of his, Rob Baxter from Binghamton, New York. And we were just sitting there, you know, late tip. So you just sit there the whole day and try to figure out, you know, wait until game time. And he says, you know, he said, "Hey, Rob, you know, when I get a chance, I'm going to hire Sam with me." And you got to understand, as a manager, all I wanted to do was get my foot in the door and break into college basketball. And that was the first time that I actually heard one of those guys. And I knew we had good relationships, but the first time I had heard one of those guys actually say that they wanted to take me with them. And I will always remember that moment. And my senior year, he was involved with some jobs, and we thought he was going to get them, ended up just missing them. And then it ended up being a blessing in disguise because a year later, you know, he gets the Monmouth job, which is a tremendous, tremendous job. There was no hesitation in my mind that I'd be going with him.
So he gets the job, and you know right away you're going to Monmouth. It wasn't like
absolutely
2 weeks without hearing from Coach Rice, and you're at home sweating it out. You were already packed, ready to go.
He called me like 20 minutes before his press conference, and he was like, "Hey, Sammy, you're coming, right?" I'm like, "Yeah, Coach, I'm coming." He's like, "All right, cool." Hung up. I was the one name. Everyone else was an assistant at that point somewhere else, so he couldn't say their name. So he's dropping my name in the press conference. I'm like, "Wait a second, I haven't spoken to Coach Stallings. I'm sure Coach Rice has."
What was the timeline? He got the job, and then how many days till you showed up on campus?
It was actually a Sunday. Sunday, he asked me to meet him in the office. And he was planning, I think, on going Tuesday to officially accept the job and have the press conference. So we sat in there on Sunday, and just kind of talked about what it would look like and his vision for what we were going to do. So it happened pretty quick.
What was that like coming in? I'm sure you were the first guy on staff there with him. What was that like coming into a new situation? This is your, not your first full-time job in college basketball, but your first new program to be a part of. What's it like going in there? I'm assuming it's kind of late spring. What's the mindset?
Well, I think what was interesting about it, I had known King for 5 years as an assistant. And, you know, you think when someone goes from, you know, moves over that chair and becomes a head coach, you know, how are they going to be different? Are they going to fit that head coaching mold more? You know, you don't really know what that's going to look like. And I thought what was interesting for me to witness firsthand and for me to experience was, you know, King was even truer to himself when he became the head coach. You know, the things that he valued, the things that he was good at, you know, now he got to run his own ship. So the entire program really, really reflected, you know, the importance that he puts on the relationship with the players, taking care of them, you know, getting the most out of them. So that was fun for me to see him move over seats and really get to put his mark on his own program.
Is there a vision that Coach Rice has from day one that you guys just start implementing right away and kind of chip away and get better and better at it? Or does that vision kind of change and through the years and you guys kind of figure it out as you get a better feel for the landscape of Monmouth?
King's thing as an assistant and then as a head coach has always been that you take care of your players. You know, when we recruit, we always call the parents first. We always recruit the families, and his, you know, what he says is his biggest responsibility, and therefore our biggest responsibility as a staff is just to help continue the job that these parents have been doing for 17, 18 years. And I think what that leads to, and King's always been this coach, it leads to a really high level of trust with his players. And I think our philosophy is, you know, basketball is not that complicated, even though we as coaches like to make it out to be this really complicated sport. At the end of the day, you know, if you're any good at it, you know what the kids are supposed to do on the court. And the really good coaches and staffs are the ones that are able to get their kids to do it. And it starts with trust. And I think I wasn't here for that press conference, but I think King's first press conference, but the meeting, he met with the team right before, and he told them that he loved every single one of them. And he means it. And he tells these guys all the time. He told them last night after we won. He's like, just told them, I love you guys. And he really does love them like they're his family. And I think that's why you're seeing a lot of success that we're having.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, all coaches talk about relationships with their teams and that they love their guys. And I think the thing that separates Coach Rice and all the ones that win at a high level is they really mean it. Mm-hmm. It's
absolutely
the real deal.
You're right.
It's not a sales
pitch.
Absolutely. It's genuine. So you guys go through year one, finish 12-20, 10-8 in the conference, in the Northeast Conference at the time. Year two.
Don't finish, bring up those numbers.
Year two, finish 10-12. I got a couple more numbers. They get better, though, I promise.
Okay.
Year two, take a little bit of a step backwards, 10-21, finish 5-13. And then after year two, what's the mindset like? You guys lose, I think, quite a few players. Are you thinking, let's just continue on with where we're going? There's kind of a lot that happens after year two. You guys change conferences is the first thing. How does that affect, you know, your mindset and then losing all those players? What's your mindset on how do we continue?
Well, the first year, I mean, we started off 0-8. I remember our first win, we were at Navy, which was our first win and obviously King's first win. And I remember us celebrating in the locker room. And there, some of that was expected. I don't know. You know, when we first got here, I remember us playing Virginia Tech in like the fourth game of the season. And we're doing the scouting report. And our 7-foot center raises his hand and has a question. And we're like, yeah, Phil, what's your question? And he said, Coach, they've got 4 players who are 7 feet tall. And we're like, Phil, three of those are subs. Like only one of them plays at a time. and he's asking, like, how are we going to beat him? So we're looking at each other like, oh, goodness, like we got no chance. But at the end of that year, I think we end up winning 9 of our last 12. We make our conference tournament in the Northeast Conference, which isn't an automatic bid for the first time in a long time. And it was kind of – we kind of got it trending upwards. And then in year two, we took a step back, which I think was really hard for everyone just because we had kind of raised the bar a little bit and then we moved the opposite direction. But I think it was just tough for everyone. You know, I think King and we came in, you know, really, really confident with the plan, you know, expected just to start winning just cause we were there. And we were all humbled. I mean, I have tremendous respect for King for a whole bunch of reasons, but you know, one part of that is, you know, King Rice works on himself as a coach and as a person as much as anybody that I know, and I think he has just continued to redefine himself as a coach and a leader since the time we've been here. Whether the basketball piece, when we first got here, we were out in the passing lanes denying. And then he made a really difficult, a really courageous transition to play pack line defense, which fit our league and fit our personnel better. And then even in the way he coached, you know, he's now we've gotten different players as it's gone on, but he's, I think he's really found his groove and just how to reach these kids and get the most out of them.
So after year two, you guys sign 8 players. You bring in an eight mm-hmm. person class. You're also promoted from director of operations to assistant coach. When did that happen?
That happened like very end of June. Coach Rice had talked to me about the possibility of that happening. Right before the July recruiting period.
Was most of that 8-person class signed by that point, or did you guys still have some scholarships available?
I think it was pretty much signed. We may have had one going into the fall. I can't really remember.
So after 2 years, you guys don't have the wins that you expected to have. Now all of a sudden you have 8 scholarships. Is the mindset, mm-hmm. you know, you guys signed 8 freshmen. How hard was it to resist, hey, we got to get a quick fix. What we've done hasn't worked. Let's go get a JUCO guy that can help us right away. What was the mindset there? Why 8 freshmen in one class? That's pretty bold.
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, what Coach Rice has planned from day one, which he's continued to do, is to build this program the right way. And we did it, you know, I remember when we first got here, he called every single one of our guys' parents just to do right by the current kids and build a relationship with them. You know, I think we had 3 rules when we got here, and we've evolved as a staff, but it was one of them. Well, it was try your hardest, be early, and the third one was smile on campus. So he basically, from day one, he made it clear that he did not play around with academics. He was the first person in his family to get a college education. And he understands the responsibility that he has to these kids and their families when they do come with us, that they graduate from college. So what ended up happening was we really struggled our first 2-3 years here on the court, in the classroom, under his leadership. We had 2 of the best academic years in the history of our program. And, you know, that's not what a lot of people like to hear in college basketball on Twitter and what people talk about. But what King was doing was he was building this program the right way. And we have an athletic director who, as he says all the time, is one of the best athletic directors in the country. And she recognized that. She saw, despite struggles that we were having on the court, she saw the type of program that was doing. And amazingly, to her credit, going into year 4, I think it was, we had lost, going into year 4, we had lost 20 games 3 years in a row. And right before, about a week before our first game, year 4, she gives King a contract extension and us a contract extension. But, I don't think there's a lot of athletic directors in the country that are bold enough to do that and have the foresight to do that. She certainly looks brilliant now. She was brilliant before, but I think it just goes to show you how important time is, especially when you're building a program the right way.
And that support from the administration is so underrated. People always talk about this is a good job, that's a bad job. It really doesn't it come down to does your athletic director share your vision? How much do they support you? Isn't you get promoted to assistant coach 2013, What mistakes do you make early on as a first year assistant?
You know what, I think for, you know, 4 years as a manager, 1 year as video coordinator, 2 years as a director of operations, you're at practice every day. You're learning ball if you're doing it how we do it. You know, you're just trying to take everything in. So you really know, you have a lot of information that you can share with these guys. And you're like, okay, as soon as I get my chance, like, I'm going to coach these guys up. I'm going to teach them. I'm going to help them. And then all of a sudden you're on the court coaching and you're like, man, I'm not delivering this information like I was picturing in my head. You know, I remember the very first drill of like practice number one, King was like, okay, Sam's going to be over here doing closeouts, which of course we know how to teach closeouts. Like, we're a defensive team. We do it every single day. Where they're like stumbling over myself, like feeling like a fool. So I think, first of all, just being on the court, just getting the reps, and, you know, having a head coach who allowed me to stumble. He knew I was going to stumble, and he saw me stumble and was okay with it. And let me grow through it to the point now where he allows me to have a big voice at practice. And then, you know, as far as recruiting, I think recruiting was an equally steep learning curve and continues to be. First and foremost, I think finding my own voice in recruiting. You know, I look up to King a lot, and I look up to a lot of the guys that were at Vanderbilt and the guys who I've worked with here, Rick Callahan, Brian Reese, Derek Phelps, were here when we first got here. And I think I was sounding like them, especially like King. And I think a big area of growth for me was just kind of figuring out what my voice was so I could be genuine with kids and with the recruits, and get a lot more effective.
Speaking of recruiting, mm-hmm. I want to get back to that 2013 class. It ended up being a historic class for you guys. Justin Robinson, probably the most significant of all of them. How soon did you know Justin Robinson was a special player?
You know what? After his first year, he ended up, his first year was our first year in the MAC, which is just a bigger, tougher conference, and he kind of got beat up. He had some foot issues, and he was just a smaller guard in a physical league.
And first of all, I remember, sorry to cut you off. Yeah, how tall is Justin really? He's listed at what, 5'8"?
He's listed at 5'8". Probably 5'6".
5'6". And if you guys haven't seen him, one of the most explosive guards in the country, was player of the year in the MAC last year. Was he player of the year the year before?
He is fun to watch. No, he was player of the year last year, and this year he
will be
player of the year. Except for King's vote. Yeah, he will be unanimous. You know, his freshman year, he kind of got banged up, and when the year was over, I remember myself thinking, you know, I'm just not going to recruit smaller guards. You know, it's just not a good look. and I was definitely wrong about that. But, we are his sophomore year, he started getting busy. And his junior year, he was player of the year. I mean, we are constantly, we just sit on the bench during games and we're like, how did he do that? Like, you know, he just, his ability to score, nobody can guard him. I know I haven't taught him that, but I'll teach him how to finish off too and take contact, because that's how the unathletic white boy can finish at the rim. But what he does is unbelievable. And I think, you know, what we did do in recruiting, you know, and Brian Reese was the assistant who spearheaded that recruitment. But we recognized that he came from a really good family, that he was the right type of kid, that he was coachable, that he was tough. You know, he had all the intangibles. And then I think we just got lucky. I mean, the kid ended up being an absolute stud, maybe the best player in the history of this school.
Who'd you guys have to beat out to get him?
Nobody.
You guys were the only Division I offer?
He had one Division I offer to Monmouth University. Wow. How about that?
So how much?
That shows you.
Yeah, how much were you guys nervous about taking a chance? I know, you know, at this level that we're at the mid-major level, you know, a lot of the times you're not recruiting guys with 10, 12 offers. Is it scary to throw in that first one, or do you just trust what you've seen?
You know, one thing that I've learned from King is, you know, King's thing has always been, you go on the road, you figure out who you like, and then you recruit them. and it has nothing to do with what other people think, you know, what they're rated, what's this, what's that. You know, you just go and you figure out who you like. And I think, you know, it can be, there is some anxiety, you know, having been through it now, recruiting kids when you know, you need, you know, a little bit of it. You want some confirmation that you're seeing what you're seeing because other schools are recruiting him too. But King has always kind of empowered us to, you know, we know basketball. Right. You know, we've been around basketball our whole life. We know who can play. And you just go out there, you figure out who can play, and then you try to get them.
That's great. Having a head coach that supports you guys as assistants like that is also huge.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So year three, you mentioned you guys change conferences, go from the Northeast Conference to the MAC. Harder league, mm-hmm. bigger league, more physical. What's the biggest difference in the league play?
You know, the size and the physicality, we're on a whole new level. And then I think, and the NEC is a much better league than people give it credit. But I think in the MAC, every single game, top, you know, number first team through 11 is capable of beating you on any night. I mean, if you're not bringing, if you're going to come in sleeping into a game, you are getting beat in this league. And then you play 20 games. You know, it's a balanced schedule, at least for the moment. And you go through a 20-week season playing those type of teams. You know, that's and then we did it with a whole bunch of freshmen. You know, that'll take its toll.
So you guys finished that year 11-21, finished mm-hmm. ninth in the conference. That's year three. Is there mm-hmm. pressure going into year four? Year four is always the number
yeah.
that people throw out in their heads.
Absolutely.
You mentioned your AD gave you guys an extension going into that season. So I guess, was there not pressure? Mm-hmm. You guys felt good about it? What's the mindset?
Well, I think we were definitely hopeful because that in year three, we were doing it with a lot of freshmen. So we knew that we had the pieces to build something. But absolutely, you know, and I'm saying it as an assistant, like I'm sure King felt tremendous pressure. You know, that extension didn't happen until November. I think that what that did is it gave us and it gave Coach Rice the peace of mind that, you know, reaffirmed that Marilyn McNeil, our athletic director, was behind him. But then, you know, King is ultra, ultra competitive. I mean, one of the most competitive people that you're going to meet. And the majority of the pressure that he experiences is the pressure that he puts on himself. So, you know, he's been a winner his entire life, you know, as one of the best point guard in the country coming out of high school, was a point guard for Coach Dean Smith at North Carolina, went to a Final Four, you know, as an assistant, he's always won. And now he got his chance to be a head coach and he didn't experience that same success right away. And for someone who's that competitive, I'm sure that was, I mean, I know that was incredibly difficult for him, but I think our team reflects the fact that he is relentless. You know, he sticks with things and he overcomes, he consistently overcomes his entire life. And this Monmouth is no exception.
One thing that I've noticed you guys do a lot of there at Monmouth is you redshirt players. I think I counted five guys on your roster now who have at one point redshirted. Is that yeah. a philosophy of yours, or are those just, you know, coincidental circumstances that led to them having to redshirt?
I think it's a combination of the two. You know, Coach Callahan says all the time, and he's the veteran on our staff, so he's been through it on every level. And when he says it simply, when you redshirt, you are trading your freshman year when you're 18 years old for your fifth year of college basketball when you're 22, 23. You know, which year are you going to be better? It's not even going to be close. Now, I think we rarely do we recruit someone with the, you know, intention of redshirting, because the kids that we bring in, we're trying to continually make our program better. So we're expecting them to be able to contribute very quickly. But when the opportunity does make sense for someone to redshirt, whether it be, you know, because of academics or because of something going on in their life or because of how our roster is shaking out, you know, I think we have those conversations with an understanding that it could really benefit the kid.
So you're sitting in year four, a little bit of pressure, and you have a freshman on your roster, Micah Seaborn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he redshirts that year. Now, the year after, he comes in and averages double digits a game.
Yeah.
How difficult is that decision to keep him redshirted when, hey, maybe we were in a pressure year, we have to win, and we got somebody who obviously can help us in our program?
So Micah's situation was unique just because we expected him to be able to play as a freshman, and because of the eligibility center, he kind of got the short end of the straw and was forced to sit out his first year. So that's, you know, that was just a little bit, it was kind of taken out of our hands. I think it ended up being really good for Micah just because it gave him a chance to kind of get his feet set, you know, in a college environment. It's just an example of, you know, when a kid redshirts, there are different reasons for every single kid. And in Micah's case, he didn't really have a choice. At the end of the day, you know, it might have been the best thing that happened to him.
You guys have some success in year four. You finish 18-15, 13-7 in conference, fourth in the league. You got to feel pretty good about that, especially because, again, you return almost everybody, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at year four, that was our first year really having success. So I think we had kind of been chopping away. And to get some validation in the wins column, that definitely gave us some confidence as a staff, certainly with guys coming back.
Everyone talks all the time about culture. That's like a big buzzword now, is culture. Mm-hmm. And obviously something you want to build. And when you take over a new program, you have to change the culture, whether it's good or bad. Mm-hmm. Simply the new staff is just different. So you have to get everybody mm-hmm. on your page. What are some of the culture things you guys did over the years to kind of shift it, to make it your own?
Well, that's culture might be, developing a culture, it is something that King is incredible at, and I think any good head coach needs to be really good at. But first of all, like we talked about, just an environment it's players first, you know, a genuine caring about the players. And then I think what was brought to light last year with our bench, just having fun, enjoying college basketball. You know, King tells us all the time, he's like, you know, he says, Sam, they're 18 to 22 year old kids. They're in college. We've all been in college and they're playing college basketball. Like, if they're not having fun doing this, then we as a staff are doing something wrong. And I think, making it fun for these guys, you know, what was a really, really helped us break through. And then I think, you know, I talked before about King just working on himself more than anybody I know. And I think because that's who he is, we have a culture of growth. He really, really believes in helping other people grow. I mean, I specifically remember, you know, you asked me when I joined the staff, you know, maybe a week after that. So I'm a year out of college, a week removed from arriving in Monmouth, and we're standing in the gym. I'm the director of operations, and King stands next to me and he's like, hey, Sam, you know, in 8 years, you're going to be a Division I head coach. And I was like, I knew at the time I wanted to be a Division I head coach. I'm not sure I imagined it being in 8 years. And he just kind of puts in your head, and it's not fake. Like, he really sees the best in people, and that's one of the reasons he's able to get it out of them. And I've been fortunate to be with someone who knows that it's my dream and my vision to be a Division I head coach. And since I met him when I was 17, and then certainly these past 6 years being on his staff at Monmouth, he has constantly put me in position to grow into that role.
You talked about your bench. You guys became a little bit famous for your bench last year. The bench mob, you guys, the celebrations after every three and every basket were like outrageous, hilarious. Making Sports Center segments specifically dedicated to mm-hmm. your guys' bench. How did the bench mob start, and when did it start?
So last year we played Notre Dame on Thanksgiving down in Orlando at the Advocare Invitational, and I remember we beat Notre Dame. We get back to the hotel, and I'm just hanging out at the hotel, and I'm looking on Twitter, and I start seeing little vines, little snippets of our bench celebrating during the game, and I was like, What is going on? Like, I had no idea this was going on at the end of the bench. And what was funny is that the bench ended up, you know, people really ended up praising the bench. But as you can imagine, not everyone was a fan of the bench at first. And even I was sitting there like, I didn't know how it would be received. And a lot of people didn't think it was right. Wasn't this, wasn't that. And to King's credit, I mean, he immediately said, you know, he feels like a lot of times the adults take the fun out of it from the kids, and they weren't demeaning anyone. They were doing it the right way. They were just, they were contributing in the way that they could contribute. And he, it's in vintage King Rice. He will have our players back, you know, immediately and to the bitter end, especially when he feels like they're in the right.
So you mentioned the Notre Dame win last season. Let's talk about this. You guys start year five and open up with wins in the non-conference against UCLA, USC, Georgetown, Rutgers, Notre Dame. Five high major wins for Monmouth. Monmouth now going on the road, getting paid lots of money to play these games, and you're knocking them all off. Not just one, but five. What is that like? I mean, what's the mindset? Are you guys surely, I mean, I know you go into every game wanting to win it, but you couldn't have foreseen that, could you?
I think going into the year, we were excited that we could probably win one of those games. And then we ended up winning all five of those. Actually lost to USC and then got, you know, unusually got a chance to play them again and then beat them down in Orlando. But no, I don't think we saw it. At the same time, though, King, since we've been here, Coach Rice, he has a special way of getting you to believe things are possible. You know, our first couple of years, he'd have me like ready to go beat Villanova with, you know, the worst team in the NEC. And then by year three and four, I'm like, hey, King, I'm not falling for it anymore. Like, we're not winning these games. You're not getting my hopes up. And then we go out and beat five of them. But I think it obviously speaks to the kids we have and speaks to, you know, King's ability just to affect these kids' minds and get them ready.
I think it's unbelievable that you guys had the success you did with all that went on last year, beating the five high majors. You guys were on ESPN every night, talked about all the time, really became the Cinderella team months before March Madness. You've got this bench mob that is a social media sensation. Again, they're doing special segments on College Game Day about them. How did you guys manage the circus that was last season and still be able to go out and take care of business?
You know, that is a great question. Somehow, I mean, we our guys and our Coach Rice and our staff, we handled it as well as you could have handled it. You know, I think our kids, it's funny because what's happening is we beat five BCS teams. So Justin Robinson got the MVP down in Orlando, and we didn't even win the tournament. But then we come back, and the people who get, you know, get the publicity are the three guys at the end of the bench. So most 18 to 22 year olds, they're going to feel a certain type of way about that, you know, whether they're good kids or bad kids. That's just tough. And I think our guys, I mean, we have such good kids, which is not an accident. They come from really good families, and everybody was really genuinely happy about everybody else's success and attention, and that carried us right through the season.
So the bench mob, did that ever become a distraction or no? It was embraced by your team.
It was embraced. I mean, I was convinced that it would only last like two or three games. I was like, they can't be entertained. Can't sustain this over the course of a season. Like, surely they're going to run out of material.
They kept coming up with new stuff. It was better and better.
Yes, they did.
So does the bench mob still exist? Is it still in full effect this year?
It is definitely not in full effect. I mean, there's a different – well, first of all, you know, one of the members of the bench mob was a redshirt who plays significant minutes in our rotation. You know, one was a walk-on who ended up pursuing a different career. But I think we celebrate each other just as much, but there's definitely a different maturity level and level of seriousness that our team has.
So speaking of the level of seriousness and maturity, you guys have a veteran group back with a lot of experience coming off a season where you won 28 games, won the MAC championship for the first time in school history, went to the NIT, won a game in the NIT. Now you're back with almost everybody. What is the mindset? Is it, you know, how is it coaching a group like that? Is it just don't screw it up? How much teaching goes on? How much is motivating? What's it like?
Well, it's nice. It's nice coaching a bunch of older guys. But, you know, last night, we played last night, Josh James, who is the best defender in our league. And, you know, says to me after a media timeout, he's like, hey, Coach Ferry, you know, if you don't hear me talking enough, you know, make sure you tell me and call me out. I'm thinking to myself, like, okay. But when you're seniors, you know, and he's the defensive guy. He's not the one getting all the buckets, and he's asking to get himself called out. So you can imagine, you know, the accountability that leads to for the rest of the team. But there's just a, you know, when you've done something before, as we all know, there's just a different level of confidence and a different swagger that you have going about it. And that's why, you know, we've won 13 in a row now, I think it is, and they have not all been blowouts. I mean, there's been a handful of really, really tough battles, a lot of them on the road, some of them in overtime. And when you have a veteran group, there's just a quiet confidence about that group that they know how to win and that they're going to win.
Now, the MAC, you guys play two conference games early in December. Then you get back to your non-conference schedule, and then conference really starts up at the end of December. You guys took care of the first two games early December, went back to your non-conference, came back from Christmas break, opened up, and lost the first two. What was the mood like? Was there concern, panic? I mean, some of your guys are probably thinking you might go undefeated in the conference. You lose the first two. What's it like there?
Well, I think losing is never fun in this program. But, you know, those two were, you know, stung especially just because 'cause our team, you know, we're capable of winning both of those games, obviously. But I think King has a unique ability to have his pulse on the heartbeat of our team and kind of the way that he needs to lead in a given situation and how we need to go about it as a staff. And I think he and we are constantly balancing, you know, helping to get these guys better and driving them with keeping them fresh. And I think, you know, he would tell you that we were really leaning towards keeping them fresh. And in doing so, we lost them a little bit. We lost our edge a little bit, you know, right after New Year's. And those two games kind of, you know, it certainly got our guys' attention. And then it gave King a chance to say, okay, maybe what this group needs is, you know, we need to lock back in. And if we get a little bit tired on this journey, that's okay. But at the end of the day, you know, our team is gonna peak at the end of the season, which is what needs to happen anyway. And that was 13 wins ago.
Like you mentioned, you guys have won 13 straight. You guys clinched the MAC regular season title last night, 22-5, 14-2 in conference right now, with still a couple weeks left. Headed into the postseason, guaranteed a spot in the NIT. Sam, good luck the rest of the way. Punch that ticket to the dance. We'll be rooting for you. Really appreciate you coming back, especially as a former Rising Coaches attendee and member. We really appreciated having you and wish you all the best.
Thank you, Adam, for having me. And good luck tomorrow. I'm jealous of your early tip-off time. But I hope you get that W.
Thanks, Sam.